It's the Full 48. Howard Beck, senior NBA writer for Bleacher Report. Before I get to my guests, quick programming note. This podcast is ending soon, I'm sorry to say, at least on this feed. I will be back with a new podcast, new platform, new name, sometime later this year. In the meantime, please follow me on Twitter if you're not already. I'm at Howard Beck. It's easy to remember, at Howard Beck. Follow me on Twitter, and whenever I have the latest on what's going on with my podcast, the news will be there. With that out of the way, very excited for today's guests. Returning to the show, the co-hosts of one of the best, maybe the best, NBA podcast out there. Yes, even better than this one. It's All the Smoke, which returns with new episodes this week. Of course, I'm talking about Matt Barnes, Steven Jackson, Matt Stack. Welcome back, guys.
Good morning, Hal.
Thanks for having us.
No, appreciate you guys being here. You were last on the show. We were in studio last time. Now we're on Zoom because that's just how the world is. A lot's happened since I saw you guys in November. We lost David Stern. We lost Kobe. Pandemic, shutdown, return from the shutdown. And of course, as well, George Floyd. Stack, my condolences to you. You're actually the reason I became aware of that event, of that news period, in the first couple of days there before this became a national story, because of your friendship with George Floyd. So my condolences. And a lot has happened to you, to everybody, obviously, but Stack, you personally, can you just, how are you? I mean, how are you now? How have these last few months been for you?
First off, thank you. I appreciate it. And thanks for having us. I honestly don't know how I feel because I really haven't had the time to take it in. You know, a lot of people don't know. We lost Kobe. Then I lost Georgia. But before that, I had lost three other close friends from my hometown. So I haven't really had a chance to mourn anybody. So I don't know how I'm feeling, Howard, to be honest. I know that God's given me enough strength to do his work and to stand for all races so we all have equality. And he's also given me, continuing to bless me, to be back on Showtime and to have more options with our show to keep attention on love for all who have love for all, which is how I stand, and that's what I stand on. And just giving us the opportunity to continue to spread love, bring everybody together, because our show is a culture shifter. So I'm happy to be back. I don't honestly know how I'm doing, but I know I'm leading with my heart, and it's taking me all in the right direction.
Well, I'm glad you guys are back. I'm glad you're doing all right. Matt, as Stack's obviously good friend, as well as partner in this podcast, can you take me through it from your angle, just in terms of watching Stack go from obviously being in mourning to becoming a leader in this movement that evolves in May and June and July? How have you supported him? How have you experienced this through him?
You know, I've never been prouder, Jack. You know, this is obviously something that was unexpected, that he wasn't looking for, didn't ask for, but it kind of fell in his lap. And he's always been a leader on the court and someone I know off the court who was a rider for his people. So it only made sense, you know, once everything started moving that, you know, Jack was, you know, the face of the biggest protest the world's ever seen. You know, I mean, all 50 states, you know, 13, 16 countries. And it's been amazing, you know. So I've just been, you know, doing here and there. You know, I would text them, you know, encouragement, try to make them laugh a little bit, letting them know, you know, it's important to take care of himself as well, because he's bouncing from city to city, traveling more than NBA players do. And, you know, just that he needed a lot of, you know, like you mentioned, there was a lot of grief before this George Floyd stuff hit. So just really make sure he takes care of himself and his body, because he can't help no one if he's not at full strength. So, you know, it's been tremendous to see, you know, him kind of transform and really find his calling post-career. You know, obviously, I think the podcast has kind of helped us, you know, get our footing in our next life. But I definitely think this social justice was what Jack was, you know, put here for. And I think he's been doing a great job.
Because of that, guys, do you think that that is going to be even more a focus of this second season of All the Smoke? Because, I mean, look, the first season, you guys, your guest list is incredible. The kind of people you've been able to bring on in sports and entertainment, everywhere, politics. Do you think that because of the moment we're in now, as you guys return to this platform, are you going to lean even further into social justice issues, political issues, maybe even more so than you would have been before?
I think, you know, our goal was always realizing that sports was going to get us in the door, but we're so much more than athletes, you know, so not that it's almost that our hands been forced. But, you know, I've been in this social justice space for about 3 or 4 years now, you know, with Jack being the face of this new movement of late. This is something that we're both entrenched in. So I think you have a unique opportunity where two former athletes have found firm footing in another space. You know, normally it's stick to what you know, stick to this, stick to that. But we know a few things. So it won't be centric, but it'll definitely be a theme throughout here on out. I think not only our show, but I think everybody's show, you know. Like Jack said, we're fighting for equality for all, you know, everybody versus hate, you know. So normally politics and sports don't collide, but this is not so much to me about politics. It's just about human rights and equality. You know what I mean? So if that's what you're asking, yes, it'll definitely be a common theme throughout not only our show, but I think everyone's show is going to, you know, obviously touch on where we feel we need to go as a country.
Yeah. No, well said. And I mean, look, the case can be made, and I've made it on this podcast before, that these things are not separate in the first place. All this stuff is intertwined. There never was a separation of sports and politics or sports and society, everything that we all go through. But if there ever was a perception that those things are separate, I feel like it's been pretty well shattered now. And we can't afford to go backwards in that. Stack, I want to jump right in on this, because I know, you know, you guys have your first episode back. We're taping this on Wednesday. Thursday, your first episode back is just you guys talking about a lot of things, including what you both have been through in the last several months. Allen Iverson, I think, is your first guest. That one comes, I think, next week, right?
Yeah.
And that one's already in the can, too. But I know you covered a lot of issues in your first episode, including, obviously, DeSean Jackson, the things that he had said in his Instagram post, Stack, the things that you said in the wake of that. And I know you, and I know that you're more than willing to talk about this, but I want to just set this up first from my own perspective. Like a lot of people, I felt for you at the time that the George Floyd killing happened. And my immediate thought was, wow, this is incredible how you're channeling this into something positive, leading this movement. And so when the DeSean Jackson stuff happened, I think like a lot of people, I felt it on a couple different levels. One, some of those messages were hurtful and I was taken aback. But two, I think, you know, we don't know each other well, but I know enough about what you're about to know that's not the message that you want out there. And it worried me because of this more than anything else, Stack. I know, and we all know, how much people, how eager they are to jump on anybody who tries to lead a movement like this and to try to undermine them and discredit them. And I thought the worst part about this is going to be, and it's not to say that the messages weren't hurtful. I don't want to diminish that at all. For people who were bothered by that and hurt by it, I was too. It's not about, ultimately, it shouldn't be about that. That can become a distraction. So I'm just putting that out there so you know where I'm coming from on it. It did bother me. I was concerned and a little disappointed too. I know you've had a lot of conversations since then and plenty of time to discuss this with people. Where are you now on all that, Stack? How are you feeling about what you said then in the wake of it? And how are you thinking about it now?
Well, first, I appreciate you using from what you know from me than assuming what people are saying or how things are trying to get twisted. Before all this happened with DeSean, I was told that you're a young black man, Jackson, that's standing for every race. And you have every race following you. They do not like that. There's going to be a million ways to come at you. They're going to make up stuff. I was told this ahead of time. I sent Matt the actual text message between me and DeSean, and I sent it to Shaq as well. Those two people that I felt that I needed to send it to. Because everything that was said about me or tried to make it seem like I said was twisted. When DeSean texts me, he texts me the article of how they were with the response from the Eagles about how they were suspending him and how they're saying that what he posted was wrong and he shouldn't post it. I was fine with that. They were right. He shouldn't have posted that. But they never talked about firing Riley Cooper. Now, for people who've had common sense, what have I been doing the last 3 months? Fighting for equality, fighting for justice. So I would never speak on something like that when I'm standing, when it's clear that Riley Cooper is getting handled a different way than DeSean Jackson. So I had to speak on that because that's what I've been fighting for. For people that know me, you wouldn't know about me if it wasn't for a Jewish kid named Josh Pastner. So by the fact that, and he's the head coach for Georgia Tech. So I really didn't need, and I want you to listen, I don't need a class on how to love people because I've been doing it my whole life. You know what I mean? I don't need a class to feel sympathy for people because I went out my way for people my whole life. The guy who gave me a chance to be a basketball player in the B scene is somebody who I hold close to my heart. Josh Pastner, which is a Jewish kid. He changed my life. You wouldn't know me, Howard, if it wasn't for him. So I don't have a hateful bone in my body. So when all that stuff was being twisted and making it seem like I was speaking on what Deshaun spoke on, it didn't bother me because the people that I knew and know me know how I stand. Now, definitely, I went out and called the people who I cared about to make sure that they understood that I wasn't agreeing with what Sean was posting about the actual quote he posted. I don't even know what the quote said because I didn't even read it. You know what I mean? So everything was twisted. And I can tell you today, I don't hate nobody. I don't hate anyone. And for any Jewish person that was offended, I apologize. But my words was totally twisted. Yeah. And one thing about it, let me say this last thing, that for people who have a history of racism, you can go back in their history and see them doing other stuff that's racist. You never seen that in my history with nobody. Everybody knows I love everybody. I can tell every race I love them and mean it because I have. So it didn't bother me. I just wanted to make sure that I reached out to people who cared about me, who I had a relationship with, so they understood where I stood.
Appreciate that. And I don't want to dwell long on this because I know you've addressed it many times. And you're obviously, as I say, addressing it on your own podcast as well. Is there anything to be learned just in terms of like, look, we're all in this social media age and sometimes we're all a little quick to retweet something, regram something, weigh in, and maybe we haven't fully processed yet. And there's a backlash. I've done it. I have stepped in it more times than I can count on Twitter. Have you thought about that aspect of it at all? Are there pieces of this that you say, like going back, like maybe you would have framed it differently or tried to express your support without necessarily giving people the impression that you were supporting the messages that he had thrown out there?
Well, I definitely could have chose better words. I could have chose better words and made it clear that I was speaking on a Riley Cooper situation, you know, and from educating myself about the Jewish community, it's Black Jews. So I can't be anti-Semitic. It just don't even make sense. You know, it's a made up rhetoric. Nobody's pain is worse than the next person's pain. We're all human beings. We're all one race. So I'm kind of glad that I'm getting a chance to talk about it because this is bringing the Black and Jewish community together, whether you believe it or not. You know what I'm saying? So I'm happy it did happen, but I don't mind clarifying myself to my Jewish friends because they do matter to me and I do love them.
Matt, for your part, and Stack for you too. When this first happened, my first thought was, oh man, because of the tense times we're living in, I don't know what the ultimate ripple effects of this are going to be. Like, are they going to try to yank the show or anything? Did you guys have any concerns as this blew up those first couple days that Showtime might pull the plug on you?
I didn't. They called me. They know me. I work with every race on our show. We work with every race. And everybody on our show know that I'll run through a brick wall for them. I think they knew my words were twisted. They knew what I was standing for, and they supported me. And I'm glad they supported me because 9 out of 10 times, Howard, you know, when stuff like this gets twisted and it's a Black man, they don't even think to think rational or find out what happened. They just canon them, you know? So I told this to Showtime on the show, and I told Steve and Brian this ahead of time. I appreciate y'all standing behind me and not just judging me off my words being twisted. You know me as a person. And you judge me off that. And I appreciated that. So I thank Showtime for having my back.
I think personally, obviously, looking at from the outside, looking in and knowing Jack's my brother, I know what Jack is about. You know, so before he even sent me the text conversation between he and Deshaun, I knew that he just had Deshaun's back. And I knew that he also probably didn't read what the fuck Deshaun what
you can curse. Deshaun you can said. Curse.
Okay. I was thinking and now find out that it was true. I'm sure he didn't even read what Deshaun said. I just knew that, you know, Jack and Deshaun are tight, and he had Deshaun's back from a standpoint of, if you're going to treat Riley Cooper a certain way for saying a slur, treat Deshaun the same way. So that's where I knew he was coming from without even speaking to him. You know, once everything started getting, you know, blown out of proportion and made a bigger deal, I started thinking like, okay.
You the first one to text me.
The first, and I was just like, you know, you kind of really have to be aware of what you're saying now, because like what Jack said earlier, now that, you know, oddly enough, normally once you leave your first career, that's as big as you're going to be and you're going to fizzle out. You know, Jack and I have been fortunate enough to continue to grow and evolve, you know, our platform and who we are. You know, so with that said, we are targets for things, and we really have to be cautious of the way we word things, the way we post things, the way we like things, anything we do, because we are for a movement of love. So if they can find a way to, you know, get a chink in our armor, they're going to do that, you know. So I took it, and I know Jack took it as a learning experience. You know, I mean, I wasn't aware of, you know, obviously I knew about the Holocaust and other things that kind of surfaced in the Jewish community. But it gave me an opportunity to kind of educate myself and learn more, which I think we all need to do, because we're all looking for equality. And I think we have to be vulnerable enough to step outside of our life and step into someone else's shoes to truly understand what they've been through. Like Jack said, there's no comparing pain. We've all been through tremendous trauma, you know, through our lineage. So I took the opportunity to try to educate myself, learn more. Jack did the same thing. And like we said, our movement is for love and for peace and for equality. So we just have to be careful for anything that we say that could be misconstrued or twisted or ran a different direction than what we actually meant it.
That movement was something that was of great concern as the NBA and as players debated whether to restart the season. And there were people who didn't think that necessarily it was the time to start playing basketball again, because there were obviously some weightier issues to address. And NBA players have been really immersed in that from the start. But they did restart. And I think the NBA has done its best and the players have done their best to make sure that those issues did not get pushed to the side. From Black Lives Matter on the court to slogans on the jerseys to the PSAs that they've run during the games. And then eventually, which we did not see coming, of course, was a couple-day player strike after Kenosha, after Jacob Blake. How do you guys, as veterans, as alumni of this league, feel the league and the players have done in this time? Are you, you know, do you think this is the right approach to still be playing and to use the platform to keep getting the message out that way, as opposed to stopping entirely and just addressing racial equality?
I think this is, you know, one thing. Normally, Jack and I are aligned, and I think we were on different spectrums, but we both understood where we were coming from with our reject or our go forth with it. You know, I was someone thinking that our voices are magnified so much more when we are on the NBA stage, you know. So you would still hear the superstars. You would still hear everything that LeBron is doing. But would you have heard Doc Rivers, you know, tearful plea? Would you have heard George Hill, would you have heard Fred VanVleet? Would you have heard the messages from guys that aren't superstars? You know, so my whole message was to not only, and I knew that painting some stuff on the court and putting stuff on the back of jersey was not going to be enough, you know, but I think the players have gone out of their way to continue to speak on issues, which I think is big. But then also talking to Chris Paul, I know they have a lot of things in the works. And I think today in society, we want stuff to happen so fast. Like, what are you doing right now? And how is it going to, and nothing, you know, this racism and hate was built, you know, in our lineage, 400 plus years of this. So any change is not going to come overnight. And I just think that's what people have to understand, that the NBA players are doing more, and we will see hopefully soon what else they have planned, but it's just going to be a process. And when I tell people, you know, everything we're fighting for now, we may not see the fruits of our labor, but our children are going to see it and their children are going to see it. So like I said, it took 400 years plus years for us to get to this boiling point where we finally realize there's a real racial injustice problem in our country, in our society. So it's not going to be healed overnight. And it's not going to be, Jay, all of a sudden the NBA is not going to come up with a plan that's going to eradicate racism. The NBA is not going to come up with a plan that's going to continue to have, you know, stop cops from killing unarmed minorities. It's going to take all of us, and it's going to take some time. So to back to your point, I just thought our voices would be more magnified like this than, you know, separate islands.
Yeah. Stack, did you agree? Did you think that, that they should have stayed out of the bubble and just worked on the issues?
Yeah, I think when I was in Minnesota and everything was going on and I heard they were going in the bubble, I was against it because I knew the power they had, you know. But I also saw it. That's one thing about me and Matt. I also opened my mind and see things from his view too. And they did keep attention on the task at hand, what was going on. But what hurt me, what I didn't like, is when they decided to not play, I think they should have kept their guns. They came back and gave the power right back. I think they should have stuck to their guns when they decided not to play or not go at all. But everything they did at the bubble, I said was going to happen. A Black Lives Matter shirt on the court or whatever, I can't breathe, all the stuff that we've seen before. So it was nothing different, but they did keep attention on what was going on. But I think once they stopped playing, I think they should have shut it down then. Just my opinion.
I mean, it was powerful even for them to shut it down. It's so spontaneous. Yeah. Even for that night, like that was an incredibly powerful, that was unprecedented. It had never happened. And then it spread to other sports.
Right.
So it did make an impression, but I get what you're saying too. Like, okay, well, but then what? They got some new concessions from the league in the wake of that. I mean, do either of you have thoughts about what else the NBA specifically could be doing? Obviously, look, this goes way beyond the NBA, goes way beyond sports, and there's only so much that any individual or any league or corporation can do. But from an NBA standpoint, are the gestures that they've made, the money that they've pledged, is it enough? What else would you do? You think you guys would like to see from the league?
It'll never be enough. I can also say it ain't too much more they can do. They're doing their part. You know, they're doing their part. They're doing more than other leagues. I think at the end of the day, it's not going to be done just for, like you said, from one league. It's going to have to be every race, everybody standing together to get this done. And like Matt said, what we fighting for, we might not ever see. But when we can all come together, every race, and stand together, we'll get equality. But then it's a lot of people that are in our own skin color that don't want equality. So you got to remember, we fighting some of our own people too. You know, so I think when everybody from love can stand together, then that's when actual changes start happening. But what the NBA is doing, you can't ask them to do more because you can't put everything on their shoulders. They're doing a great job.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think the NBA showed their power. I think it was a spur of the moment thing when they decided not to play and they didn't really have a necessary plan. They just knew it was in their backyard and it was probably in their best interest to react. But like you said, Howard, I think it was a domino effect when we saw that a predominantly white sport in baseball followed their lead. And I know the MLS is not predominantly black, so I know they also followed the lead, the WNBA, the NFL. So we showed our strength. Now we just have to have a plan moving forward, and it has to be a united plan, and it can't just be basketball. It can't just be sports. It's going to have to be all of us. But I think that athletes and former athletes, we're up to the task of doing our part. You know, so me personally, I would like to see the NBA owners do more. I think it's great that they put $300 million into a pot, but that's 30 billionaires. So you think about it, $300 million is what, maybe one and a half of the players they pay. So in actuality, it wasn't really that much. I would like to see these owners that have their mouths closed to put their money where their mouth is. If you don't want to talk, put some money where your mouth is. You know, I would like to see every owner come up with $100 million for each team and then throw that into a pot. So then you've got $300 million or, how many millions is that? That's a lot of millions.
I think 30 times anyway, 100 million, but 3 billion?
Yeah, right. Yeah. So whatever, whatever the situation may, I mean, I think that's how you can really make effect. And then I think they need to link with, so often we see money, you know, Jordan is donating this, Nike's donating, where does that actual money go? You know, so I think they need to have someone who's in charge of the money that is in these cities that can say, hey, you know, these programs are really doing what we're looking forward to doing, instead of just throwing it to these big names, because sometimes these big names aren't really even doing anything with it. So I really think they really need to hone down, hire someone, and really work with these communities that they're taking so much money from. You know, if you think about it, all these arenas are in cities, and most of these cities are minority cities that, you know, the poverty line is where it is, you know, so people are planning their whole month budget around taking their family to a football game, to a basketball game. So I think that's where we really need to start, really try to start giving back as to these cities and really make sure that this money is allocated in the proper areas.
Yeah. No, and you make a good point. The $300 million sounds, and it is, it's a big number, but it's $300 million over 10 years. So $30 million a year, 30 owners, it's $1 million per owner. And not all of them are billionaires, but a lot of them are. For them, it kind of is a drop in the bucket. I don't want to minimize what $1 million is. It's a lot of money, but you know, perspective is important there too. What you Matt, you alluded to team owners and what more they could or should be doing. A lot made statements in the wake of George Floyd's death. A lot have made statements along the way, and some of them have done much, much more. Some have taken action and pledged a lot more money beyond the other pot we were talking about. But let's be real. Some of these owners have been supporting this president who is doing everything possible to oppose the Black Lives Matter movement, to oppose police reforms, to oppose everything that we're discussing in terms of racial justice. I don't know if there's an answer on this one, but I'm just going to throw it to you anyway. I'm just curious, like how do we reconcile these things? A league that says it's standing with you on these issues and pledging money and putting out statements, but at the same time, some of their owners are very much backing a president who is absolutely opposed.
Yeah, no, it's a tough situation because, like you said, they're standing on the opposite side of the court. And I think that's what we need now is we need them to stand on the same side of our court. And the reason why people act, you know, you've got money, you're being a baby, you're a whiner, you're a crybaby, you're this, you're that. We're one injury away or one bad move from being a statistic. You know, we're one move away from being George Floyd, Orlando Castillo, who, you know, and the list goes on from people who didn't make it out. You know what I mean? So we were fortunate enough to make it out. So now it's our honor, our job to speak for those who don't have the platform and those don't have the opportunity to speak. So I think you made it a great point. I mean, not only in football, but not only in basketball, but football in particularly, these owners are completely opposite in what we're looking for, you know? So I don't know if there is an answer. I know this is, you know, the owners club is usually a good old boys club in professional sports. And, you know, a lot of these owners are, you know, late 60s, 70s, 80s. And that's just the way they are. You know, there's no changing someone who's been set in their mind. There's no changing a Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones is one of the most outspoken owners in the history of sports. And he's been quiet as a church mouse because we know what he's about. You know what I mean? So there's no changing guys that are set in their ways. And I don't even expect them to change. So to answer your question, I don't know if there is an answer, but I know that, you know, in the next 10, 15 years, there's going to be a new wave of owners that are hopefully are more receptive and more willing to listen and to really be with us instead of just saying
we need more owners like Mark Cuban. Mark Cuban has been very outspoken. I haven't heard too many NBA owners speak the way Mark has spoken. Mark has been on panels speaking about it, and he's been trying to educate everybody. And I think every owner should have that same passion, especially when the league is 85% black, 87% black. So the owners can make a bigger step, because me personally, I don't think David Sterling was the only racist owner. And if anybody thinks that, then it can't be true. I know these guys haven't stood out and spoke up as much as they could. And a lot of people can throw money away to say that they down for the cause, but nothing means more than actually physically being there, showing your face, bringing your time to show that you're down for the movement. Nothing's more. You can put all the money in the world, but some people never see that money. And that's why a lot of black people are having problems with Black Lives Matter. You know, yeah, Black Lives Matter, but people don't know what the organization is about. There's so many stories about it. You never know where the money's going. You don't see the Black Lives Matter people actually in the hood, you know, with these people when we doing give back. So it's a lot of stuff going on. So we got to keep it genuine. You know, we got to keep it genuine, and we got to make sure that it's from the heart, and we not just donate money. We got to donate our time and our physical appearance to these people. Because a lot being out there, Howard, I've learned that it's so many people that want to see us in these areas so they can know that we care about them. It's just not black people that's poor in these areas. It's every race. I'm inheriting everybody pain when I go in these areas. So I just want people to, yeah, money's good, but try to put yourself in these people's position. Try to show up and show them that you care without just donating money.
Yeah. All right. Matt has to bail. Matt, thanks for spending the time, man. Appreciate it, man. Great
thanks,
seeing
guys.
You.
Safe travels, bro.
Let's do all it again soon. You. Stack, you're going to stick around for a little bit?
Yes, sir. Appreciate safe travels, right. Bro. Call me when you get home.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
Take care, Matt. Stack, let's end this on a couple of lighter notes here. And actually, Zoom is going to boot me in a second here, but we could always reconnect if we have to.
All right.
You guys have had, as I mentioned earlier, on your podcast, you've had Kobe, I think his last interview, you had KD, Vince Carter, you had Snoop, Ken Griffey Jr., Draymond. You guys it's been an amazing array, and I don't know what's coming. If you can preview a little bit of this season, who else do you really want on this podcast? Do you have like a dream get for your pod?
I have at least five guests that I want to have on. I know I want to have Spike Lee on, 50 Cent. AI was one of my guys. AI has been the most requested guest since our show started. Believe it or not, one of my favorite actors of all time. I want to get Steven Seagal on the show. I like Steven Seagal.
Wow, you know that's going back a ways.
Yeah, I like Steven Seagal. But, you know, we want to keep it to where it's just not about sports. Yeah. So, you know, we listen to our followers. You know, a lot of our followers, you know, we want them to tell us who they want on our show. We don't make it too much about us. But a lot of times, you know, we have people on because we want to know about people, educate ourselves too. So I really don't have a long list, but I'm just excited because we have a lot of people that want to be on our show this season, and I'm just excited about it.
Yeah, who is anybody from the world of politics that you want to bring on as we're, you know, as you guys explore further into these issues? Is there a figure in that space?
It's kind of hard for me to say that because, from what I've learned, they all have their own personal game, so you never know who's genuine. Mm. You know what I mean? You never know. I've been asked to talk to Trump. I've been asked to talk to Biden's people. I turned them all down. I'm not a politician. Yeah. If you want equality, it's people that you can talk to. It's not a basketball player. It's not a comedian. It's not an actor. It's people that's dedicated their lives to stuff like this. So I don't think that I would want somebody from politics to come on the show, because I would never pick a side, because there's nobody that's actually one of us, Howard, that's standing for us. I don't think it'll ever be a candidate that's like that. But we're going to talk about it. Like I said, this is a hot topic, and most of the people that come on our show, we kind of feel the same. You know, we've all worked with every race when we all stand on the same way. So it's good to have this conversation, and it's good to talk about politics, but we don't want to get into it, because what I have learned is everybody have their own motive when it comes to politics, and you never know who's genuine.
Yeah. No, fair. All right. So you guys are, I think it was 43 episodes your first season. I don't know what you have exactly charted out, but tell me about just the experience of it and what you guys, neither of you had done this before, right? Like, we talked about this on my pod when I had you on November. If anybody could host a pod, it's the two of you guys. You are no holds barred. You guys have always been great talkers and with plenty to say. You know, no surprise, your pod was a hit right off the bat. But I was new to this 3 years ago. I had to figure out how to go from being a reporter to being a podcast host. You guys have been NBA players, and you've never been interviewers, right? So you're learning that on the fly. What do you think you're better at now? What are you still trying to kind of learn of this as you move into season two?
Well, I think the best thing that helped us coming into this show, where me and Matt were already two people that understand you can disagree about things, but the respect can remain the same. You know, just because you disagree with somebody, you don't have to disrespect them. We've always carried ourselves like that. So we knew with having people on our show is going to be more of a conversation than interviewing. Everybody that come around us, especially when we're smoking, you know, they kind of relax. You know what I mean? And people know us as we wear our emotions on our sleeve. So when people come talk to us, they looking to open up. They looking to say things that they didn't say on other shows, because that's how me and Matt come off. I think just having the opportunity and the to be on Showtime, I think a lot of people understand what we're doing, and that we're shifting the culture, and that we're changing the narrative for a lot of athletes and a lot of people. And we're doing it the right way. And I think that's why people are willing to come to us and open up to us, because we're opening up to them as well, you know. And we like I said, we wear our emotions on our sleeve, and everything about us, we're willing to talk about on the show as well. So I think it go hand in hand.
Can you preview for folks a little bit of what, because I know the Allen Iverson interview you guys have already done, it'll come out next week. Can you give listeners a sense of where that one went? Because I know that had been, you know, as you mentioned, high on your list, somebody you really wanted to get on the show. And AI, mm-hmm. like you guys, he never holds back. We know he always keeps it real. So where does that interview go that people are going to be interested in?
You're going to love it, because this, you know, AI is a very emotional guy. We all are. You know, people think we tough because we played a basketball game with a passion and not being scared to get hurt. We did everything. We gave everything to the game. So people think we're tough because we're tough on the court, but we're real all human beings. We cry. And Allen Iverson is a very emotional guy. You got to think, this guy is really shifted the whole culture for us as far as basketball players. You know, he gave us all the confidence that we don't have to compromise nothing. We can be who we are and still be successful with my tattoos, with my braids, with my baggy clothes, you know, and he gave us all the confidence that we can make it. I think with the show, he even talks about the anti-Semitic stuff. You know, when people said he was anti-Semitic because he took a picture with Farrakhan. You know, and he's definitely on there talking about that. And he don't have a hateful bone, but I'm gonna let him explain that. And he also goes into John Thompson. You know, that's a really emotional time for him, losing his coach, somebody that was like a father to him. And then again, being Allen Iverson and not getting treated like Allen Iverson. How many players that shifted the culture of the game, that did what they did for the NBA, that's on that pedestal, but don't get praised like that? He is that guy because he don't walk the steps the normal way. So the show is going to tell you a lot about Allen Iverson. It's going to be emotional. The show is going to have you in tears, because you might see him in tears in the show. He talk about a lot of stuff. And the fact that we appreciate him and we brought him in to give him his flowers, it meant a lot to him, because what he's done for the game, he hasn't reciprocated the love.
You think whether it's the NBA or the Sixers, you think he's just not been embraced enough in his post-playing career?
I think it's the Sixers do a great job. If anybody, his team, but I think the NBA owes him more love for what he's done for the game. You know, he's done just as much for the game as Kobe or Jordan or anybody else, you know, especially for the black race, you know. And like I said, it's a lot of kids that got confidence, that believed in themselves when Allen Iverson showed up to that game with braids and being his own self. You know, he gave a lot of kids confidence, and our culture appreciates that. Even the hip-hop culture owes a lot to Allen Iverson. Hip-hop and basketball wouldn't be so intertwined if it wasn't for him.
Yeah.
So we got to give this man his flowers. I told him on the show, we lost Kobe. We can't lose you. You mean a lot to us, so we got to give him his flowers now.
Yeah. Speaking of Kobe, the timing, you guys got him, I think it was, what, late December?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it was
end of the year.
Yeah, it was just a few weeks beforehand. And, you know, it's all still, I'm sure for you too, it's all just still surreal and startling every time I think about it. Like, I come across old stories I wrote about him and everything, and then I have to remind myself, like he's gone. It still doesn't feel real. What was the best part about your interview with Kobe back in December?
You know, when you got a guy like Kobe that tells you he's proud of you, that means everything. It's different with me because I looked up to him since a teenager. You know, we the same high school class. We played the McDonald's game. So he was different from he was different to us as a teenager. So I was idolizing him then. So to get to the point where he's had that NBA career and we're sitting here and he's on our show telling us how much he's proud of us and he never would have thought that we'll be in the media space, it meant a lot to us because he said a lot of stuff to me and Matt that he wanted to say over the years from not seeing us. And I'm glad that I was able to shake my brother's hand, hold his hand, and tell him I love him and to have that time with him before he passed, because he's somebody not too many people look up to people and idolize people their same age. That was the situation with me and Kobe.
Yeah. And this may be on a lighter note because we've hit a lot of heavy stuff today. We're recording this Wednesday.
That's what we're supposed to do. That's what we're supposed to do. We hit the real stuff. We don't run from nothing.
No, we should. We should. But we can hit the full range. It's Wednesday morning. There was some basketball last night, including a game 7. I'll just ask it this way. What the fuck happened to the Clippers?
Hey, it's the bubble. No home court advantage. Everybody's in the same place. It's all about how you prepare. It's all who wants it more. You know, and that's what it came down to. No home court advantage. It's about what team is going to play hardest and what team is going to make shots. You know what I mean? I said this earlier. I love Paul George. He's my little brother. But when you're in the bubble, you should be more focused on the game, because you don't have no outside distractions. You can't leave. So you should be focused on basketball. So you should be locked in, right? You should be locked in. And that's what players are doing. And that's why any team can win right now. You know, that's why you've seen so many two different teams come back 3-1 and almost win a series. Because you're in a bubble. There's no home court advantage. It's about who's the best team that night. And with the Clippers, I just got to be honest. They got ran in the ground. They're not the defensive team that they thought they was. Obviously, Paul George didn't play well at all. I honestly think that Pat Beverly is a great defensive player, but he didn't stop nobody in the series. So it wasn't the Clippers team that we thought we was going to see at the end of the season. They was a totally different team game 7, and that's why they got beat by a dub.
It was, I mean, I don't want to say it's shocking because by the end you could almost see it coming, right? By the time you get to game 7, you're thinking, all right, these guys maybe aren't who we thought they were. But look, Stack, I was one, and there were many, many of us last October or even last July when they got Kawhi and Paul George, who thought this is the best team top to bottom in the league right now. And it's no disrespect to anybody else, certainly not to LeBron, who I've always made a rule, never bet against LeBron. But
right
after LeBron and AD, I saw some holes in that roster. After Kawhi and Paul George, I saw incredible depth, and then they added even more along the way when they got Marcus Morris, when they got Reggie Jackson. Like, they... That team, I thought, had no real obvious hole. And yet here we are. They're out. A lot of us were wrong. And it's not. And they didn't get knocked out by the Lakers. They got knocked out by the Denver Nuggets, a team we've all been sleeping on, frankly. So just from a basketball perspective, I mean, is it getting out maneuvered? Is it like you were talking about focus? Do you think that they weren't focused enough? Like, the talent is there. And look, I want to say this real quick, too, before you answer. The Nuggets have great talent and great depth, and I've always praised the depth of their roster. But their top two are not the same as the top two of the Clippers, and that's normally how it goes in this league, right? Identify the top one or two guys in the series, and that's the team that usually wins. So it still in some ways doesn't make sense to me, even though obviously, I think the Nuggets have great talent as well.
You got to keep in mind two things. Murray is having a breakout year. He's one of the best. He's probably the best player in the bubble right now, as far as stats, as far as win percentage, as far as bringing his team back, going through adversity. I don't see any two stars really carrying their team like Jokic and Murray. You got one star in Miami with Jimmy. Of course, AD and LeBron, but Miami's one star and Boston two stars. Young stars got to prove themselves. But Murray and Jokic, they've been showing up every night. They've been showing up every night and been real consistent, 50, 50, 46, games like that. So that's why they're winning. Their stars are stepping up. But also, Doc Rivers is the only coach to be on multiple teams and blow 3-1 leads. So it can't be too surprising.
Wow. So you think this is definitely, at least in part, on him as well?
Well, it has to be. I mean, obviously players play the game. Paul George did not show up at all. He did not show up at all. And you have to put some onus on the coach. You have to. You have to, because you got to think, this is the same coach that had Chris Paul, DeAndre Jordan, and Blake Griffin. You know, this is the same coach that had that team, and they lost 3-1. So you got to – Doc can easily step away and just be in the office and pass it to T. Lou or Sam Cassell, which I think would be the best thing to do.
Really? You think it's time for Doc to move on?
Yeah. He can't. He's the president and the coach, I think, still.
I think he relinquished the president title like a year or two ago.
So, oh, he did? He relinquished?
Yeah, Lawrence Frank is team president. They've got a good front office. So I think Doc, no doubt, is certainly still involved.
I love Lawrence Frank. That's my guy. Lawrence Frank's my guy.
Going back to New Jersey.
Yes, sir. You remember that.
Of course. Yeah, no, Lawrence has a great staff. Michael Winger, that whole crew, like they do a great job because they got these guys.
Right.
So Doc is still involved, obviously, because he's Doc. But no, he's focused solely on coaching at this point.
Yeah.
But you think maybe it's just time for a different voice? I mean, coaches talk about this too, right? Larry Bird said this when he took the Pacers job way back in the day. Like, there's an expiration date on us. Like, they, whatever he said, 3 years, 5 years, something like that. At some point, they start to tune you out. I think Phil Jackson used to talk about that too sometimes. Do you think that they've maybe – I mean, this team's pretty new to Doc, at least the two stars are.
Yeah, but, you know, when Doc won that championship, he had four Hall of Famers. You know what I mean? You got to think about that. It's not four Hall of Famers on the team. Maybe three. What shit? I don't know about George Paul right now. He got to get himself together. But Lou Williams is definitely a Hall of Famer. And Kawhi is definitely a Hall of Famer. But I think – for a coach to blow two multiple 3-1 leads with multiple teams, it has to say something about the coach. I know players play, but he's the only coach that's blown multiple 3-1 leads.
I love Doc,
but I'm just speaking facts.
It's a tough one to have on your resume. But Stack, you mentioned right off the top, hey, it's the bubble. Anybody can win, and there's more comebacks and everything else. And I think there's a lot to that for sure. Would we have just seen a different outcome if this had been at Staples Center or if this had been a normal series, a normal postseason?
Yeah, it'll be a totally different game if you got 30,000 Clippers fans hollering at guys on that court. And it's a lot of guys that can make shots with nobody in the gym that can't hit a house if they was in the kitchen if it's 30,000 people in the arena. And some of your best shooters can make shots in the first quarter but can't make them in the fourth quarter because they're tougher shots. So it's totally different, and it's more of an evil playing field in the bubble.
Yeah.
You know, having those fans screaming and having to travel, get off a plane, go get stuff, leave the hotel to get stuff to eat, all that stuff comes into effect. You know, whether you're tired, how your legs feel, if you are out too much, like, all that stuff matters. But the bubble erases all that, and everybody's on the even playing field. And you see guys that's been working on their game during the break. You see guys who came in and taking it serious, and they're the guys that shine, and Jimmy Butler, Murray, all these guys – you saw them working during the break, especially Jimmy Butler, and it's starting to pay off for this guy.
I wondered when they started this thing, Stack. I wondered, like, how much of the fact that there are no fans, there's no travel, there's no home advantage, no road disadvantage, everything that goes into it. Like, would we see more upsets as a result? And somebody, Mark Stein has had the stat last night on Twitter just about, like, the number of home games that have been lost, you know, quote-unquote home games, right? The designated home team has lost more often in the bubble. But until last night, we hadn't really seen, I don't feel like, a true upset. Like, this is, you know, I mean, I Miami over Milwaukee obviously is an upset too.
Yeah.
But one, I think Milwaukee was a little overrated and Miami was definitely underrated. Like, that one did not shock me. But that one obviously goes down technically as a serious upset. When a one seed goes down, team with the best record goes down in the second round. But I think there's actually been less volatility than I thought there might be. So it's interesting. I mean, maybe the Nuggets are just that good. Maybe we've just been, you know, and the Clippers had a choppy season. These guys were rarely together. You know, Kawhi's load managing, Paul missed time with injuries. You know, maybe, you know, in fairness, the full context is they didn't have time to fully integrate, get their chemistry right. But, you know, no one's going to care about any of that, of course. It's, you know, loss is a loss, and this is a pretty bad one.
They're lucky that the games wasn't in Denver. Because, you know, the first 5 minutes of the game, you cannot breathe running up and down their court. They always have the advantage of the first 5 minutes. They used to that elevation, so they used to it. You lucky you're in the bubble, not Denver.
Yeah, so maybe it would have gone seven regardless. Maybe this happens regardless.
Exactly.
All right, so, you know, you don't shy away from anything. I'm certainly not shy away from anything. So how about this? Are we still sleeping on Denver because their star is a big kind of goofy-looking white guy from Europe? Are we still not giving proper respect to the European player? Because that stereotype started 20-something years ago when we first started seeing a big influx. And I feel like there is still a little bit of that. Even in Luka Doncic not necessarily being regarded as highly as he probably should have in the draft. He should have gone number one. Do you think that's still there?
So people who don't know the game, Jokic is the best big man in the game to me. Luka's top 10 in the game to me. I can tell you something that a lot of people don't know. When the Mavericks lost and a lot of guys were kind of trying to pick him with Luka and trying to punk him and trying to take him out of his game, you know, be real physical with him. I text Rick Carlisle after the game, and I said, tell Luka he just made history by becoming one of the best players in the league, and also I got his back. If he ever needed me to call me. Because a lot of times when guys do that to guys like Luka, they're letting him know, you're too good for me to guard you, so I have to try to stop you in other ways. But when you have a guy like Luka, and Rick Carlisle came out a couple weeks and said, they need an enforcer. They need a tougher guy on the team. So when guys start to pick on Luka and stuff like that, you got to have that veteran to step in and dead that. And Luka needs that because he's going to be great in this league a long time. He's breaking Michael Jordan and LeBron records already in some categories. So I'm a big Luka fan. I put Luka as high as anybody. But the people who think like that about Luka and Jokic, they don't know nothing about basketball.
Yeah. No, well said. Well said. I do think that the impression is still there. I think, and I don't think it matters who is speaking, whether it's media or players, black, white, otherwise. I just think that everybody's got a little bit ingrained in their head still, that we're still a little suspect of the white European player. And it's one of those things. I think that stereotype or the idea of them being soft or this or that, it just endures for a while. And
get over it. Luka's here to stay.
Yeah. And so is Jokic.
Oh, of course. Jokic is the best big man in the game right now. No question.
All right. Let's last thing on the bubble. Then we got Nuggets Lakers starting Friday and heats up 1-0 on Boston. Who you got in each?
Set game two. I think Boston will come out and figure it out.
No, actually for the series. Let's predict the series.
Oh, for the series, I can't go against Jimmy Butler. If you look at Jimmy Butler, we one and the same. We the same guy. We both from Texas. We both had a tough background. We both tough guys. We both want to win. We'll do anything for our team. We're the same guy. We talk all the time. I'm not going against Jimmy. I just think his will and the way he's leading, I think he can pull off an upset and bring Miami to the finals. Western Conference, I bet on the Lakers from Matt. Actually, Matt owes me money. He bet on the Clippers. I bet on the Lakers. We've never seen Tim Duncan on steroids with LeBron James, and that's what AD is. Tim Duncan was great, the best player I played with, but Tim Duncan wasn't athletic. Tim Duncan didn't shoot threes. And Tim Duncan didn't put the ball on the floor like Anthony Davis. You know what I mean? So those are the three things that Tim is great, the best power forward ever in my mind, but AD can pass him. And LeBron having him on the team, that dynamic, we've never seen. We've seen LeBron with point guards. We've seen LeBron with a two guard. We've never seen him with one of the best big men in the league, and that's why they're having success. I got them winning.
So Lakers overheating the finals?
Yeah, I got Lakers overheating the finals, and I don't think it's going to go maybe five or six games.
In the finals, yeah.
In the finals.
I'm leaning that direction as well. I'm pretty leaning pretty hard that direction as well. I wasn't sure if the Lakers could make it all the way back. I wasn't sure, you know, this is like this team was so many new pieces, everything else. But the way they're playing right now, I think, and you know, look, the Nuggets, both good and bad, they're just happy to be here, right? Like they're loose. Exactly. they're loose because nobody expected them to be here. That works in their favor, but also like that might maybe that moves against them as LeBron and AD turn up another notch in the conference finals. I think it's Lakers.
The worst thing that can happen to the Lakers is Boston make it to the finals.
How so?
Because those young guys not afraid of them. They've had success against LeBron. They played LeBron in the playoffs. They have something to prove. They're not going to back down. Like I said, Tatum and dunked on LeBron in the playoffs. They didn't have success against LeBron in the playoffs. And I think if they make it to the finals with all those pieces they have, with Marcus Smart playing well with Kemba, I think they have a good chance of beating them because they have enough people to throw at LeBron and they have enough scores on that team. It's a nice matchup. And they got some young guys on Boston that's starting to step up. They got enough bodies to throw at AD. So I think the worst thing for LA is Boston making the finals.
Yeah. But you got Lakers.
But it'll be good for the league, Howard. It'll be good for the league. Hey. LA and Boston back in the finals, it'll be great.
There's never a bad time to have Lakers Celtics. That's freaking gold every time. I always say I have no rooting interest in these things. I don't, you know, I'm not rooting for teams, for players, anything else. I root for stories. But I have really, really high regard for LeBron and that he's doing what he's doing at age 35 and a half, soon to be 36 in December. I want to see him get back again. I think it'd be incredible to see him at this age with the longevity of his career, everything he's accomplished. When people thought maybe the door had closed, Cleveland disintegrates, he goes to the Lakers, he gets hurt, and you're really starting to wonder and fairly wonder. But to see, because he is one of the all-time greats, one of the two best ever to play the game, I want to see him back on that final stage. I'd like to see him do it again. You want to see the best of all time in that moment as many times as you can to appreciate it and to see them perform at that level. So if I have, you know, like I say, no rooting interest, rooting for stories, I think it'd be great to see him in there. And I do think they're going to win that. I'm a little tossed up on that Eastern Conference one. I was smack talking with our buddy Eric Newman yesterday, who, of course, you and I know is a big-time Celtics fan. So the last thing I said before I jumped in that elevator, I said Heat in seven. But that was mostly just to annoy him.
He didn't like that.
No, it'll be great either way. Stack, this has been fantastic. Before I let you go, if people are interested in working, not necessarily directly with you, but working on these issues and participating in this movement, is there any particular organization you think people should try to get plugged into or there where they could donate? Any particular ways you think people can channel this if the listeners want to participate?
There's a lot of different foundations. Even I have my own, but I'm a realist. And I say this, whatever foundation you decide to donate, make sure you know where the money's going. Yeah, I promote my foundation, but I really don't like to because I want people to pick their foundation and to do the homework on where they're donating their money. Donating their money. And it's a lot of ways. You know, some people can't be on the front lines with me, you know. So what you can do is send donations for food, you know, just worry about try to find out what people need, you know. So it's a million ways to help. Can't nobody say it's one way to help because we're all fighting to get this to the same place. So whatever you feel in your heart, And whatever you decide to donate or to what cause to help, just make sure that you know directly where this money's going and that it's something that you want to do from your heart. Don't do it because somebody else is doing it. Doing it from the heart, it always means more.
Well said. Thank you for that and for spending the time. I appreciate it. Folks, remember, go subscribe to All the Smoke. You can find them on all the podcast platforms, on YouTube as well for the video version. First episode dropping tomorrow, September 17th. And then AI. I cannot wait for that one next week. Sure. Stack, thanks for all you do. Thanks for spending the time. Thanks for all the thoughts. Appreciate it and look forward to doing it again soon.
Much love, my brother. You know we always locked in, man. Anytime you need me, you know I'm coming.
Appreciate you. Take care.
All right. Have a good one.
All right. You too.